Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm your host, Summer Brooks, and my guest today is someone who Slice of Sci-Fi fans will be a little familiar with, Mark Edlitz. He directed, created, produced the film Jedi Junkies, exposing just how obsessive Star Wars fans can be, like we didn't already know. But he has a new book out called How to Be a Superhero. And the only way to describe this is a labor of love, because he has interviewed the actors who have played the superheroes we've all loved. And Mark has a deep passion for superheroes, for comics, for movies, like all we all do. But this is, I'm going to say, next level stuff. Oh, welcome, 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 Mark.
Thank you very, very, very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
No problem. How did you get David Mamet to write the foreword to your book?
David Mamet wrote the foreword to my book, How to Be a Superhero, and that was very, 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 very generous of him. I had worked with him on a number of projects, and I had sent him the book, and he was kind enough to offer. I sent him the book, and then he wrote a foreword, and it was I don't know if I would have had the bravery or the chutzpah to suggest that, but he wrote it, and it's wonderful Mamet writing, and so
wow.
I'm very, very grateful.
Yeah, he's one of my writing fallbacks. And if I ever get stuck on something, or if I ever want to say, well, what's a different way I could look at this, I think of him and go, oh, okay.
Yeah, me too.
So how did this project actually get started?
Let me give a quick overview, and then I'll answer that excellent question. The book How to Be a Superhero is interviews with actors and actresses who have played superheroes over the past 70 years. It's grouped by superheroes, supervillains, antiheroes, sidekicks, and in the not all heroes are super section, it's people like Clark Gregg, who is not Agent Coulson in Avengers and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who's not really a superhero, but has certain aspects that are similar. There's a couple of interviews with actors who have played James Bond. Again, not superheroes, but I thought it would be interesting to include them in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to get as many of the names as the fans would want to hear from. So there's Adam West, who plays Batman, Kevin Conroy, who plays Batman, Tim Daly and Dean Cain, both of whom are Superman, Yvonne Craig, who is Batgirl, Julie Newmar, who is Catwoman. From the Marvel world, Tom Hiddleston, who plays Loki, James Marsden, who did Cyclops, Alan Cumming, who's Nightcrawler, Lou Ferrigno, who's the Hulk, as well as actors who've played Spider-Man, Daredevil, and even Howard the Duck. So let me get back to your question. How did this come up? I always wanted to see this book. When I go to bookstores or comic book shops, I would look for the book in my imagination. Wouldn't it be cool if I saw this book? I would like to get that. And I've read, interview books with, film directors and screenwriters. And I thought I'd never seen a book like this, which looked at the whole superhero phenomena from the perspective of the actor. What's it like for them to put on a suit? To become a superhero? Was it a good experience? Was it a bad experience? Did it change them, not just professionally, but did it change them on a personal level? And, did they feel powerful when they put on the superhero outfit, or did they feel constricted? A lot of people, when they put on even just a simple Superman t-shirt, they get a little jolt of energy, they get a little jolt of power. And I wanted to know if that transferred to the actor. And also, was there something about the performer themselves that was a perfect marriage of actor and part, where they felt like only they could have played that character, and that they couldn't have played a different superhero? Did the actor embody the best traits of the worst traits of the character, or are they just good actors? And that was what the book was trying to uncover.
And do you think it succeeded?
I think that for the most part, the actors were all, and actresses were all changed by their experience playing this character, that they felt like, you know, Christopher Reeve said that he was a temporary custodian of the character. And I think a lot of the actors who played the parts felt similar, where they, you know, where you're representing the character and you're sort of the mouthpiece for that character. You're the ambassador for the character. And I think that was true for most of the actors. Some of the actors, Kevin Conroy, who is, you know, many people's favorite Batman, who played Batman not just on the animated series, but in video games, including some of the best video games out there. He has tremendous respect for the role. He has tremendous gratitude for what it's brought him. But it didn't fulfill some sort of childhood fantasy of his to play Batman. He had sort of the basic awareness of who Batman was, but it wasn't filling a hole in his heart to play Batman. It was a professional responsibility, one that he took very, very seriously and does very, very, very well.
Yeah, there's an indie movie called I Know That Voice. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Oh, is that it's about voice actors?
Yeah.
Yes.
The men and women who do voiceovers for animation and for video games. And Kevin Conroy is in it. And he talks about how he was helping out around New York City right after 9/11. Just literally providing food for some of their first responders, for some of the people who had to be temporarily moved out of the area. And he said one of the guys came up to him. He said, "Are you Batman?" And he said, "Yeah, I am." And then the guy yells back out into the cafeteria. He goes, "I told you, Batman's serving us lunch." And from way, way back out in the cafeteria, somebody yells, "Bullshit." And Kevin Conroy just went into the opening of the animated series, and you hear all these people go, "My God, Batman serving us lunch. That's awesome." And he talked about just how much satisfaction he got from just saying, you know, these people's spirits were lifted because he was Batman. And I just going into more about that, just how people embrace the roles that they've played and how other fans, other people, just regular people can be uplifted by that, I thought was very cool.
Right. Yeah. I think you're 100% right. I mean, I think with Christopher Reeve, who played Superman and had struggled with, you know, typecasting, he was a Juilliard trained actor who Kevin Conroy knew, who is also a Juilliard trained actor. And, you know, Christopher Reeve took playing Superman seriously, but he didn't want it to define him. He wanted to do other things. And so I think there was always a little bit of a struggle between recognizing the significance and the importance it had to other people and not wanting to diminish that, but at the same time wanting to do other things. Tom Mankiewicz, it's 35 interviews with actors and actresses who played superheroes, but there's also about 5 interviews with creators like Stan Lee, you know, the creator of so many, or co-creator of so many Marvel characters, Jon Favreau, the director of Iron Man, and Tom Mankiewicz, Joe Quesada, also chief creative officer of Marvel, and Tom Mankiewicz, who wrote a few Bond movies and a couple of Superman films. And he talked about Christopher Reeve even before the filming started, really being concerned about being typecast. And he was at a party, and Sean Connery was there. And Tom Mankiewicz told me a story about introducing Christopher Reeve to Sean Connery. So, you know, in a fans had that Superman meeting James Bond.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I can see where back when the first Superman movie came out, I remember reading stories, hearing stories about how nobody else would give Christopher Reeve a lot of acting jobs because he was Superman. Everybody just he was Superman. How can you cast Superman in a regular role? And I never understood that.
I agree with you.
And I think nowadays, people aren't so worried about about being cast as that role and nothing else.
I agree with you 100%. People like Christopher Reeve, Adam West, who's also in the who I also interview in the book, and George Reeves, who played Superman in the 50s, they sort of got the brunt of that. The downsides of playing a superhero. They really took it on. There weren't that many. I mean, there weren't, compared to today, there weren't that many examples of superheroes in movies and TV shows as you could relative to today. But today, you've got Academy Award winning actors and actresses playing superheroes, vying for these parts, recognizing that it's a tremendous opportunity to be a part of sort of the zeitgeist and to make a lot of money, and also use that as a springboard for other parts that are not related to superheroes.
I can it's when I think about it, back in the 50s and the 70s, everybody knew who Superman was, everybody knew who Batman was, and to some extent people knew who Spider-Man was. But there wasn't this widespread familiarity with all of the other characters because comic books hadn't hit their, I guess, their high point yet. You didn't have that pop culture saturation with a large enough segment of the population to where minor characters people would be familiar with. You had, I think, the only major female superhero back then was it was Wonder Woman, and then people would go, "Who else?"
Right. No, that's 100% correct. Most people would go, five years ago, well, maybe it's 6 years ago, right before Iron Man, you ask people who are superheroes, you'd say Batman, Superman, and as you're saying, they probably say Spider-Man, but it's really not that many, and what they sort of knew about any of those heroes, you could probably write on the back of an envelope, or on a napkin. Very limited knowledge. And when Michael Keaton was making the Batman movie in '89, he got raked over the coals because they thought they were gonna. People only thought Batman was Adam West's version, which I defend. I defend. I think Adam West is an extraordinary Batman. And when I was watching him as a kid, I didn't see any humor in it. I thought, he's Batman. He's brave and he's going to save the day. And so people's knowledge of Batman was just that. And so when they did a serious Batman, it sort of confused people a little bit. And it's only very, very recently that people know superheroes beyond Batman, Superman, and Spider-Man.
And I think it's a testament to just how much people want to believe in superheroes, that we have so many superhero movies, that we have so many actors lining up to play superhero movies. I remember when they first announced that Iron Man would be the first movie in this Marvel cinematic endeavor, and some people said, "Who?"
Right.
And Marvel fans said, "Why?" And now you cannot imagine any of those movies without Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark. You literally cannot imagine anybody else playing Tony Stark, can you?
No, I mean he's phenomenal. And b before A.O. Scott in the New York Times wrote that, and this was before all this wave started. It was early on. You said that when you cast an actor, he has to have enough charisma to embody the role, but he can't be so quirky that he overtakes the role. And so going from that, that's why you get unknowns. That's why you get Christopher Reeve as Superman, so that the public doesn't have to take the actor's quote unquote baggage with them. But now, and starting with Robert Downey Jr., it's all right to cast established actors in these parts. And it's almost exclusively established actors. Not always, but for the most part with these big Marvel movies, when you have X-Men characters, many of those are established actors, and some of them are not as established, but and Spider-Man might be, more of an up-and-coming actor. So yeah, Robert Downey Jr. just redefined how people cast these parts. And eventually, though, eventually, they will have to recast Tony Stark. At some point, I don't know when that is, and they've been very clever about perhaps minimizing the amount of time Downey has to spend in the Iron Man suit to make him want to come back. But eventually, Sean Connery was James Bond. Sean Connery is James Bond, the posters used to say. And it was at that time unimaginable that another actor would take over, but eventually many, many, many other actors did. And for a while, it used to be a debate, who's your favorite Bond, Roger Moore or Sean Connery? And now it's not just those two. Now there's seven. Is my math correct? Lazenby,
Six or
Sean
seven?
Connery,
Yes.
Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig. Is that six? Or you could also say David Niven from Casino Royale and Woody Allen, Jimmy
Right.
Bond, and but so there's plenty.
And I think people are getting used to the fact that you will have different actors playing different superheroes. I mean, I remember when they cast Chris Evans as Steve Rogers for the first Captain America movie. And I'm like, wow, that's going to make it hard for him to play Johnny Storm again, isn't it? And we had little geeky discussions about that. People playing multiple superheroes. I think Ryan Reynolds has played, he played Green Lantern, and who else?
He was Green Lantern, right. Ryan Reynolds was Green Lantern in the DC film, and he's Deadpool in
Right.
for Marvel.
Right. So you have people who think this is no big deal anymore. So I'm kind of happy with that because now actors are more comfortable. It's like, oh, I can play a superhero and go do something else. And hey, look, those guys played more than one superhero.
Yeah.
So which of the interviews was your most intriguing or most interesting to do?
I could take a few for your different reasons. Lou Ferrigno was my who played the Hulk, as you know, was my first, and so I was intimidated by the circumstance. Although he was very friendly and funny, but that I found that to be very intimidating, and I wanted to get the book off to a good start. So that he was my first interview, so I'm grateful for that. Adam West was a childhood hero of mine, and I wanted to unapologetically support his approach to Batman. So that was a personal thrill for me. John Wesley Shipp, who played the Flash in the TV show, 90s TV show, is
Right.
playing the Flash's father now. He gave a really revealing, thoughtful interview about feeling a little bit more powerful in the suit and a little diminished outside of it. And Matt Salinger, who played or Matthew Salinger, who played Captain America, gave we had a very thoughtful conversation about, Captain America he's got the word America. He's wearing essentially the American flag all around him, as a costume. So how do you make Captain America not a mouthpiece for the government, but make Captain America emblematic of the best of the spirit of America? So he had a lot of really interesting ideas, and he never called the outfit a costume. He called it a uniform because he thought of Captain America as a soldier. So he said that was just simply his uniform. But with all of these actors, Julie Newmar, Catwoman, Yvonne Craig, Batgirl, all of these were people whose work I was interested in or admired. So it was always a little bit of a thrill to talk to anybody. And it was always a little bit surprising when they let me.
You're like, hi, I'd like to interview for you for my book. In the back of the head, you're like, I'm totally not expecting they actually talked. Wait, this person said yes? Holy cow.
Yeah. And their answers were, were very, very thoughtful. And Tim Daly talks about, playing Superman gave him an idea that violence is almost always never the answer. And Dean Cain talked about preferring to play Clark Kent as opposed to playing Superman. John Newton, who played Superboy in the TV series, was self-effacing, and he said that, people wouldn't talk about how good he was on wires. When you do your wire work for flying, and he said, "Oh, you're great at flying," and he said, "I wish someone would say that about my acting." And he talks about how he would wish he could sort of go back and for a little bit of a do-over. He said that he felt like he made his Clark Kent a little too bumbling, and not enough insecurity, so made him too klutzy, essentially, and he wishes he just simply made him a little bit more insecure, which is sort of, I think, what we get with Smallville.
Interesting. Yeah, the Tim Daly as Superman was always one of those performances you remember, but did you ever see his web series that he did with his son?
Yes, and that's great. Yeah, there's one, the Daily Supermen, and it's him, Brandon Routh, Dean Cain, and his son, who is also voiced Superman. So it's four Supermen getting together, and Helen Slater, who played Supergirl in the 1984 film, I interviewed her. And she was in the park with Christopher Reeve, talking Central Park, talking about his experience playing it, and then there's an ambulance that goes by and you hear the siren, and he turned to her and said, "Here we are, Superman and Supergirl, and there's nothing we could do about that."
Wow. Yeah, there was also an episode. It was more humorous. Tim Daly apparently had become Superman, so
Oh yeah,
his
where that
son
the
calls Nathan Fillion for help, and then
yes.
Michael Rosenbaum gets in there. I was like, okay, when we can have this much fun with superheroes, it's a good thing.
No, absolutely. I mean, we shouldn't take it too. I mean, one of the things about the book is that I tried to have thoughtful, intelligent conversations about the nature of heroism, the nature of being your true self, the nature of identity, feminism, sexism, racism, homophobia, and all those are conversations that I've had with different actors during the course of the book. But I also end each interview with the question, who would win in a fight? So I would pit, their superhero against, the main adversary. And it was always fun to hear, who would win in a fight? Because that's what, at a certain point, we are correctly high-minded about it, but we should also be correctly low-minded about this and realize that these things are they're intended to be fun,
Yeah,
that
you
we
have
should
to.
approach them that way.
Yeah, at some time you have to channel your inner fifth grader and go, Superman would beat the Hulk. No, the Hulk would beat
Exactly,
Superman.
exactly. And then there's also another section of the book where called Heroes in Hiding, where I talk to people about unreleased superhero projects. So Adrienne Palicki and her never, I spoke to her about her never aired Wonder Woman pilot.
Wow.
And I spoke to the cast of Roger Corman's unreleased Fantastic Four film. That's a film that they was had to get made by a certain amount of time before the rights
Reverted,
lapsed back to
right.
the, yeah, reverted back to the original. So they got it underway right before the New Year's, got it made quickly, and the cast was very invested in the film. And it's a film that's not technically proficient, but has its heart on its sleeve, and sort of wins you over from that point of view. So they made a feature film, and they started promoting it, and then the cast found out that they weren't going to release the film. And so it was like to be have that part of this sort of the secret history of the Fantastic Four.
Has it ever been released? I mean,
You could
has.
get it. You could get it at conventions, or but it's never been properly it and it won't and I sort of doubt it will.
Seriously doubt it ever will. Yeah.
Yeah,
Bummer.
but it's never been properly released.
Cool. So where can people find this book? I'm guessing Amazon is the number one go-to place.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, people could find it on Amazon. You know, it's also, you know, Barnes Noble, but Amazon's a great, 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 great place to get the book. If people read it and have any questions for me, I'm on the Twitter, I'm on the Facebook, I'm on markedlitz.com, and my Facebook picture has a is the cover of the book, so you could find me if, you know, you hear this, you know, a year from now, have read it and have a question. I'd love to hear from anybody who has any questions about the book.
Excellent, excellent. Now, do you have photographs of your interviewees throughout the book?
No. Yes, there are photos of the interviewees throughout the book, I think, but there's not. But there's no. I didn't take photos with them, but there's photos of them, so that people, if you're not that familiar with somebody, you'd know what they look like. 'Cause some of these, you know, some of these are from the interviews go back from the performers go back from like 1950 Superman. You know, where I interviewed Jack Larson, Noel O'Neill, who played Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane. You know, so there's every decade is represented, 50, 60, 70, 80, you know, all the decades. From Nicholas Hammond in the 70s, who played Spider-Man on that short-lived series. So yeah, there's photos.
Okay, great. Well, like
It's
I
a long
said,
way of saying yes, there's photos.
well, everyone who has questions for the book, we can we'll send them your way. I'll have links to your website, your Twitters, and of course Amazon, where you can pick up a copy of the book. Are you still doing the comic convention circuit?
I think I will like to try to get the word out about the book. Yeah, so I hope to get out there and meet some people.
Well, keep us up to date because I know some people like to get their books signed, and finding out where you're going to be so they can do that would help.
Absolutely, thank you.
No problem. Well, thank you, Mark, for your time today.
Thank you so very, 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 very much for having me, Summer. I really, really appreciate it.
No problem. Like I said, I have been appreciative of your work for several years, and this book is right up superhero geek alley. And yeah, it sounds like you had a lot of fun making it, which means there's going to be a lot of people who get a lot of enjoyment from reading it.
Oh, that's my sincere hope. My hope was that I would ask the superheroes the questions that anybody else would want to ask them, that I was the stand-in for the average thoughtful fan.
Well, the book is How to Be a Superhero. It is available now at your favorite online or brick and mortar book retailer. David Mamet wrote the foreword. Richard Donner and David Hayter, directors of superhero movies in their own right, have given advanced praise of the book already. So you got blurbs from some
I
pretty
know, isn't
heavy
that great?
hitters.
Richard Donner, director of Superman. How
Yeah.
cool is how cool is that? Very cool.
I saw that and went, whoa, cool.
That's what I said. I said, wow, that's great. It's Richard
So
Donner, David Hayter.
thank you, Mark, and we shall be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Annie.
And I'm Stephanie.
We're the hosts of The Quad, a podcast about sci-fi and Space Channel's new series, Killjoys.
Killjoys follows three bounty hunters that operate in a group of planets called The Quad that is on the verge of a class war.
We'll be discussing the episodes as they air and exploring the characters, themes, and story arcs. Find the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and at AskGenreTV.com.
See you in the quad.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Trex, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of slice of sci-fi.
Hi, welcome back to Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks. Thank you for listening. We all enjoy our superheroes, our comic books, our movies, our TV shows, and I'm guessing every one of us who has some interest in any of these heroes will find Mark's book very, very interesting. I know I'm looking forward to reading it. But as he said, if you have any questions about any of the interviews he did or anything about putting the book together, go ahead and contact him. We have his links, his website, his Twitter feed, and the Facebook page for that particular book in the links for the show notes here, slicewithsci-fi.com. Come check it out. And who knows, maybe you'll see some future articles from various Comic-Cons from Mark. He had written some very, very good articles for us in the past and got busy with the book, so I'm looking forward to hearing from him again. That's just me. Anyway, we have the next round of television and movies coming up for the July, August to sort of wind up the summer. I know, I think Darren's going to go check out Pixels. He's taken that hit for us. No, we do not have faith in any movie starring Adam Sandler. Sorry. But it's a movie about video games, and all of us grew up on video games, so who knows? Who knows where that'll go? Yeah, I mentioned just seeing some of those older games in alien form looks funny. And I just, it has Adam Sandler in it. It may not be good. That's my default mode. If Adam Sandler had anything to do with it, I'm setting the bar really, really low so I won't be disappointed. Is that wrong? I don't think so. And I'm speaking as somebody who loves video games, especially the old school video games. I used to own video games. I had full-size arcade cabinets in my garage at one point. I used to own a Star Wars. Yes, the original 1983 vector graphics Star Wars. I could never find a battle zone. That was just on me. I had a cabinet, Empire Strikes Back, the big one where you sat in it and played. A friend of mine, he got a cabinet, a sit-down cabinet of Sinistar. Remember that one? I hunger. Awesome game. I knew somebody who had a Tron Discs. I had a Phoenix and a Gyrus, which was like Galaga with dance music to it. If you ever saw it, you know what I'm talking about. At the office where I worked, there was in the break room behind the lunch tables, there was a Tempest. There was a 720, the skateboard video game. There was a Robotron, which four of us played so much that in order to get on the top scoreboard, you had to score something ridiculous like 4.5 million points. There was I think there was a Donkey Kong in there, and there was it was not a Missile Command, it was Stargate. No, there was a Missile Command there too. Somebody had a Missile Command. I can't remember who had the Missile Command, but the Stargate was in the office. And we had another guy in there who was one of those guys. Remember back in the day, somebody like put a quarter on the Stargate machine, and 6 hours later, he's still playing on that same quarter? Yeah, you know the guy. Me? I did that with Zaxxon. I would put a quarter in the game and literally could not lose for trying. I got so good at Zaxxon that when we went to the movies, I'd go into the arcade before the movie, you know, just killing time before the movie, stick a quarter in the game, and just play for an hour before the movie. And you'd have these younger kids going up, somebody knows how to play this old game? Yeah, that's me. And I'd play the game, and I'd have a whole line of extra lives at the bottom. And then my friends would yell, like, movie's starting, come on. All right. And I'd just walk away from the game and say, enjoy. I'd hear, like, five ships die before I even got out the arcade. It was awesome. But, yeah, I owned a Zaxxon table. I owned a Phoenix. I owned Hogan's Alley. How many people remember Hogan's Alley? I had the Hogan's Alley. It was right beside my refrigerator, so I could just, I don't know, pop off a few shots before breakfast or something. Does that say something about me? Ooh. Anyway. Yeah, old school video games. Every now and then these video game movies come out. They think we'll just fall all over the games because we have fond memories of the games. But it's because we have fond memories of the games that the movies have to be good. And I'm sorry, my initial impression is that it has Adam Sandler in it. It's not going to be good. I'm willing to be proven wrong, though. But I am not taking that hit. Darren is taking that hit for us. And we will let you know how Pixels is. Thank you ahead of time, Darren. We might owe you one. Or, hey, we might all owe Adam Sandler an apology. Who knows? Anyway, video game commentary. Do you have a favorite game? Do you remember your favorite game? Do you still own a version of your favorite game? Are you old school collectory like I was and have full-size arcade cabinets in your game room? If so, I'm jealous. Just saying. But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. That number is 602-635-6976. That is 602-635-6976. Or you can just email your question to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Or if you have a longer message you want to record, record that and email that to me too. Check us out on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi and at Slice of Sci-Fi TV. We're on Facebook. There's a group on Facebook. You can find the URL to that in the show notes. We're also on Google Plus. The link to that is also in our show notes. Come check out the websites, sliceofscifi.com, itscomicbookday.com. Come by, leave a comment, have some fun. To everyone who donates to keep this show going, thank you. Thank you so very much. Yes, I have not forgotten. We still are working on the Patreon bit. I'm also fielding new reviewers. So we may have a wider spread of movie and home video and TV reviews coming up for the fall. So look forward to that. And who knows, maybe by the fall we will have worked out the kinks for the live show, which currently is still in planning to be aired on Saturday mornings on Krypton Radio. That's kryptonradio.com. Go check them out. And as always, my heartfelt thanks to the guys from Sci-Fried for our awesome theme music. Well, that'll do it. But we will be back with more Slice with Sci-Fi next week. Take care.